his presidency, according to records. He didn't list the debt in financial disclosure filings, as candidates and presidents are expected to do. The loan was paid off just over 5 months into his presidency. The documents don't specify who satisfied the loan. Daewoo is a South Korean conglomerate that partnered with Donald Trump on a development project near the United Nations headquarters in New York City and on several other projects over the years. The company has ties to North Korea and was the only South Korean company allowed to operate a business in North Korea in the mid-1990s. Donald Trump may have skirted disclosure laws and not committed an outright violation of the law because the loan was on the books of his company, the Trump Organization, and not identified as a personal loan. The debt would have sparked conflict of interest concerns over an American president's indebtedness to a foreign operation vulnerable to influence by North Korea's rogue government. Donald Trump often gushed about his close relationship with North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un.
This is called football. Football players have many fans. Even if you play in an ordinary team, millions of people will know you. It's the same with the coaches. They also have their own fans. The domain of the support reaches the people who are on the sidelines of football as well. Anyone who's involved with the green rectangle will one way or another become famous and popular. In the middle of all of this, there's an exception. The referees. They are not popular. Their professional activity is not attractive to fans, and they never become a star. For fans, referees are as important as the security forces on the sidelines of the field or the supervisors of matches. Let's think about it right now. How many players do we know? On the other hand, how many referees do we know by their names or appearance? This is why referees shoulder one of the biggest responsibilities of football games. The story is usually like this. The referee is the least known person among the people who run on the field. They get the least amount of money, and they get flack more than everyone else. Everyone expects them to be flawless and restore calm in a match just like a skilled orchestra conductor. The pressure on the judge reveals itself in the World Cup more than any other time. A world of responsibility is hidden behind the whistle blown in the World Cup. The referees are the most important neglected part of the World Cup. Thank you. January 30th, 1930, when Uruguay faced Argentina in the final match of the first World Cup, officiating a match had no resemblance to what we see today. John Langanis, who was the referee who had put on a coat on his sports shorts, he's even worn a tie. Ulysses Salcido, the assistant referee, had coached Bolivia at the earlier stage. The biggest problem for the referees was all the teams had brought their own footballs and they wanted to play with their footballs. In fact, officiating a football match gradually morphed into what we know today. Until the 1970 World Cup, the referees would go without yellow or red cards or send the players off.
Trocha goes first. The captain sent off a kicking Emmerich.
Or until the 1994 World Cup. They could only wear black shirts. And until recent World Cups, there were no fourth referees. Besides all of this, the laws to officiate a match were different. Until the 1990 World Cup, the goalkeepers were allowed to handle the ball passed to them by a teammate, or until the 1998 World Cup, diving or faking injuries by players wouldn't get a yellow card. Something hasn't changed compared to those days. The referees still undergo the most intense pressure. No one is optimistic about the referees, the players, coaches, the media, fans, officials with the FIFA Referees Committee, or even politicians. So, in recent years, FIFA has paid special attention to World Cup referees. Nowadays, referee teams are supervised well ahead of the games. They take various tests in several stages. They take part in preparation camps and get to know the latest technologies. FIFA tries to choose the best referees on the planet, men or women with green characters, greater than off-the-field issues and the usual pressure of the World Cup.
I want to thank you, and I want to congratulate you that you have been chosen now for this 2014 journey. You will be my team, you will be FIFA's president's team number 33 in the World Cup. And this is a very important one.
Officiating a match today is easier than the days Langanis was running after the sun-scorched Argentine players at Estadi Centenari. The special spray, telecommunication technology, the technology to decide whether the ball has passed the goal line, and who knows, maybe even video check, but this isn't the end of the concerns. It only takes a mistake or a suspicious decision on part of a referee to make a mess, especially in an international event that's tied with national pride and patriotism for many people. The fate of all World Cup games are tied to the controversial decisions by the referees. If those decisions hadn't been made, history would have been different.
Charlton and his fellow sharpshooters came back time after time in the Ramsey spirit, believing that with sustained attack, the goals must come. Then Jeff Hurst, cool and collected, had the ball in the net. It bounced out.
Maybe the strong shot by Jeff Hurst in that hard final match was the hardest decision to make in the history of refereeing a match. No one was sure if the ball had entered the goal. No one knows even now. Tofikh Bahramov, the Russian lineman's decision was in favor of the host, Britain. He decided that the ball passed the line.
And the linesmen say yes. Yes.
It was the 101st minute. The Wembley Stadium burst into cheer, and Britain was on the verge of achieving its biggest honor. It wasn't his first mistake in the World Cup. A little earlier in the quarterfinals, Britain played against Argentina.
Now England and Argentina.
In the 35th minute, the referee sent Argentine player Antonio Ratin off. He said Ratin had used swear words. However, Ratin was speaking in Spanish and Rudolf Kraetlin didn't know that language. Ratin refused to get out for 8 minutes. The Argentine players threatened that if the referees did not go back on their decision, they will get off the field. But the referee had made his decision. Argentina had to play with 10 men against the hosts Britain and lost the match. In that World Cup, when Uruguay faced West Germany in Sunderland's Roker Park, Schlenninger, a defender who used to play for AC Milan back then, fisted at a corner kick out of the goal. Everyone saw that scene except for the referee, who didn't believe it was a penalty.
And there's trouble already. There's a fight going on in the middle there. This looks like turning into a real battle.
In the Chile-Italy match in 1962, the British referee Ken Aston sent two Italian players off in the first half while Chilean players were playing rougher than the Italians.
David kicks out regardless of Sanchez's legs, and Lionel Sanchez, son of a boxing champion, knocks out David with a beautiful uppercut.
After the unjustifiable performance by the referee, the fans came up with the idea that FIFA sides with the host countries. The hunch stood out in the 1979 World Cup, when Egyptian Hassan Ali Gandil blew into the whistle and showed the Mexican side off the field, maybe mistakenly. Mario Perez realized that the referee believed that the Mexican side can possess the ball, but El Salvadorian players didn't notice that, and the first goal was scored. The protest was useless. And after that, the 1982 World Cup, with so many strange incidents related to the referees. During During the match between Kuwait and France, head of the Kuwaiti Football Federation got into the field and made an objection. He said the fourth goal by the French side should have been dismissed. Fahad stayed on the field for such a long time until Miroslav Stupar was convinced the goal should be disallowed. The French side scored the fourth goal against Kuwait again. It was in the heavyweight semifinal when Harold Schumacher got out of the field and collided with Patrick Battiston. Battiston fainted, but Schumacher didn't even receive a yellow card.
Schumacher clearly makes no attempt to play the ball. He prefers Battiston. The French get no penalty. Schumacher stays on the field. Battiston is carried from it, and France are forced to use their second substitute.
France made a comeback from the 3-1 and got a 3-3 draw and lost the game to Schumacher's skills in the penalty shootouts and were barred from reaching the final. And the dramatic 1986 finals match, when Diego Maradona passed the ball above Peter Shilton with the hand of God.
Maradona, he can't turn. Maradona's there, rises above Shilton. And is that goal going to be allowed? Shilton came out, Maradona challenged him. Peter Shilton is claiming he was fouled. And that goal is going to be allowed. The ball flicked through by Valdano. He turned it inside, and it was a handball, no question about that. That was the only reason that Maradona was able to rise above the incensed Peter Shilton.
Nasser Ben Ali, the Tunisian referee, allowed the goal, and Maradona ran across the Azteca Stadium to celebrate the goal. Who knows, maybe if the referee had announced that number 10 of Argentina had committed a foul, today the legendary Maradona would have looked differently. And the 1990 World Cup, when in a confrontation between Rijkaard and Rudi Völler, the Dutch player revealed all of his historical hatred by spitting on the German forward's face. And it wasn't a one-off incident. The referee didn't notice that. Later in the game, when Völler crashed into the Dutch goalkeeper, the brawl continued, and the judge decided to send both players off. Völler showed everyone the referee's poor judgment once again in those games. In the evening, when Maradona cried to say the German side did not deserve to walk out as the winners, Völler faked a fall to the ground to gain one of the most controversial penalties in World Cup history. Franz Beckenbauer's Germany won the nine-man Argentina after a penalty score by Andreas Brehme and became the World Cup champions. In 1998 in France, the biggest right decision in the history of the game was made. During the last minutes of the match between Brazil and Norway, Isfandiar Bahamast showed the penalty spot in favor of Norway. 16 cameras were recording the scene, and neither of them showed any foul. Norway hammered the ball home, won the game, and moved on to the next stage. The Moroccan officials believed that everything was set in advance to remove their team from the World Cup, But later on, the images recorded by a Swedish camera showed the referee's masterpiece. He had noticed a foul where no one else did. Now, whenever officiating that match is mentioned, everyone remembers this scene, not the strange dismissal of Laurent Blanc. And we think about South Korea in 2002. Officiating the matches in that edition was in favor of the hosts to the degree that even the most optimistic supervisors got suspicious.
Tony's in trouble. In fact, it's a straight red. Off. It's a nine-man Portugal as better.
Two Portuguese players got red cards in the group stage, and South Korea won the match 1-0. And next, their encounter with Italy. South Korean intentionally hit the Italian players, but they weren't sent off. Toti was sent off instead for what the referee thought was a dive while Toti tripped on his feet. The third victims of the wrong judgment were Spain, two goals of whom were disallowed. In that year, Rivaldo faked an injury and the Turkish player received a red card, but the incident was buried under the pile of uproar by the Koreans.
Grosso, and still Grosso, he's done brilliantly, play on, says the referee.
People remember the 2006 World Cup with a controversial penalty kick after a foul on Fabio Grosso.
Neil went to ground, Grosso fell over, his prostrate body. I think it's more than debatable. It looks a shocker of a decision, to be honest. It's Totti versus Schwarzer.
Many others, with Josip Simunić's dismissal in that match, Graham Paul showed three yellow cards to the Croatian player and finally sent him off. The referees in that year were not kind to the Croatian. The 2010 games, it was a repeat of what had happened in Wembley 44 years back, this time around in South Africa. The unstoppable kick by Frank Lampard, the goalpost, the line, and the referee who didn't see it as a goal. It's true, the history of World Cup is replete with goals that were mistakenly disallowed, the players who were mistakenly dismissed, and the fouls that went unnoticed. Who knows what the history of the World Cup would look like without so many mistakes. They are what they are expected to be. Resolute and calm people who make the best decisions in the most sensitive times. The games are fast, attractive, and fair thanks to their intelligence and accuracy. If they make a mistake, even their smallest mistakes can change history. In the outburst of color, light, and sound, in the largest festival in the world, the cameras focus on the superstars. No one notices the referees unless a crisis turns everyone's head to them. We can watch the referees as well. We can watch them do their best to manage the most sensitive scenes of sports. watching the audacity and courage of a man who runs on a field dotted with mines. This is called football. Watch it carefully.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
In the limelight.
The vast unilateral sanctions and attacks against different countries around the world have had a boomerang effect on the Western countries themselves. According to reports, supply chain disruptions caused by the war in Ukraine, rising fuel costs, and the impact of heat waves on crop yields have all contributed to increased costs for producing and processing food. Farmers have been unable to boost supply, leading to expectations that costs will remain above the levels before the Russia-Ukraine conflict. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Financial Times noted, climate change and the war in Ukraine are set to keep food prices at far higher levels than before the COVID-19 pandemic. Despite signs of moderation in global commodity markets, economists and agriculture experts have warned wholesale food prices have stabilized over recent months, raising hopes that the surge in retail costs of staples such as rice, bread and milk seen in the past 2 years would diminish in 2023. The latest update of Food Price Index of internationally traded agricultural commodities, compiled by the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, FAO, published recently, posted its eighth consecutive monthly decline in November since peaking in March. The November index showed prices were just 0.3% higher than a year earlier. However, the stabilization in international markets is yet to translate into lower inflation for households around the world. Even if this does happen over time, costs are likely to remain higher above pre-pandemic levels as the war and weather events limit producers' ability to take advantage of higher prices by increasing supply. Carlos Mera, senior analyst at Rabobank, said, normally the cure for high prices is high prices. We do see weakness in demand, but production has not been very elastic. After several years of bumper crops, thanks to favorable weather conditions, grain prices firmed during the pandemic because of hoarding by consumers, companies, and governments. Even before the Russia-Ukraine conflict, which caused prices to spike because of the importance of both countries in producing commodities such as wheat, persistent droughts in key growing regions had pushed prices higher. Both the Ukraine conflict, which has raised the cost of fossil fuels and energy-intensive fertilizer production, and the third year of the La Nina weather phenomenon, the cause of severe droughts in the U.S., Argentina, and Europe, have hit farmers, curbing their ability to increase output. The supply response has been slow. Farmers around the world are applying less fertilizer, and in places such as Africa, this will lead to lower production, said Joseph Schmidhaber, Deputy Director of Trade and Markets at FAO, which expected grain production to be lower next year than in previous years. The FAO is also concerned that there could be a global rice shortage next year if producers fail to find enough fertilizer. Erwin Prefy, senior economist at IMF, said a fall in global cereal production for the current agricultural year and input cost pressures will keep food prices elevated in the near future. Fertilizer prices started soaring even before the Russia-Ukraine conflict curtailed supplies of gas, the main feedstock to Europe last year. Prices of potash jumped after Western regimes imposed sanctions against Belarus, one of the world's largest producers of crop nutrient. Although costs have fallen back from the peak, prices remain high. By historical standards and data from consultancy CRU show fertilizer remains unaffordable for many countries. The Russia-Ukraine conflict has affected three Ukrainian crop cycles so far. The 2021 harvest was prevented from leaving the country once the war broke out. The 2022 crops faced harvest and infrastructure issues, with key areas becoming war zones. Next year's crop yields are expected to fall sharply. That's equivalent to three back-to-back droughts, said Joseph Glover, senior research fellow at food security think tank IFPRI and former chief economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The prospect of higher global and wholesale food prices comes as most countries around the world are struggling with increased consumer food price inflation. Across the G7, food costs for consumers have risen by 12.7% on average over the past year. Many middle-income and developing countries have reported even higher numbers, from more than 40% in Hungary to nearly 100% in Turkey. It may take up to two more quarters before we see reductions in domestic food inflation, Prefy said. Catherine Neese, chief European economist for PGIM Fixed Income, a fund manager, said lower wholesale prices would not feed through into retail costs quickly as food production was very energy intensive, with the impact of higher oil and gas prices resulting from Russia-Ukraine conflict lingering. Consumers in emerging markets and developing economies, who typically spend a relatively large proportion of their income on food, are particularly exposed. Many countries in Africa and the West Asia region are reliant on the Black Sea region for imports and tend to have weaker and more volatile currencies. Most global food commodity transactions are priced in dollars, potentially amplifying the effect of higher costs on domestic food prices. Although the extension in November of the Black Sea grain deal between Russia and Ukraine, which ensures at least some of the country's food commodities reach international customers, has lowered the risk of further price spikes, geopolitical conditions remain precarious. Meanwhile, measures used by economists and traders to assess the availability of commodities, such as the stock-to-use ratio, indicate supplies of wheat at the lowest level in more than a decade. Glover said, "I don't think we are out of the woods yet." Prefy agreed. It said, It remains uncertain how the combination of harvest disruptions, energy prices, and monetary policy will play out. However, things could get worse before they get better.
Hidden files.
Around 2 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, November 28, 1953, something rather strange happened at a New York City hotel. A scientist got up in the middle of the night, ran across a dark room, avoiding two beds, and dove through a closed window with the shades and curtains down, then died soon after he hit the ground. His name was Frank Olson, and his death would help uncover a series of secret CIA operations involving the lives of thousands. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today's mind-blowing topic is a CIA mind control project called MKUltra. The story of MKUltra is at times so surreal that one may think it's the plot of a science fiction movie, but unfortunately, it is very much true and affected thousands of people around the world, although no one is sure of the actual numbers because of the secrecy of the program. It was a Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, top secret program, which used humans as guinea pigs to test a range of drugs that could force confessions or brainwash individuals through various forms of psychological torture. Well, you see, in the 1950s, the CIA initiated this program to experiment with forms of mind control in order to, and I quote, to catch up with the Soviets and Chinese advances in the field. 80 institutions and 185 private researchers had contracts with the CIA to perform this work, and they were located around the world, as were their victims. So Sidney Gottlieb was the CIA's main man handling this project. He was a chemist, and some of his experiments were covertly funded at universities and research centers. Others were conducted in American prisons and in detention centers in Japan, Germany, and the Philippines. Now, according to journalist Stephen Kinzer, Gottlieb wanted to create a way to seize control of people's minds, and he realized that it was a two-part process. Well, first, you had to blast away, imagine that, blast away the existing mind. Second, you had to find a way to insert a new mind into that resulting void. According to Kinzer, the United States didn't get too far on number two, but they did a lot of work on number one. There were a core group of scientists around the world who were part of MKUltra. LSD, sleep deprivation, and electric shock treatments were their favorite tools to use on their victims, but it was not limited to those. They would induce people into a high with putting them into having hallucinations, then giving them a drug to bring them down, and while in between these phases, some of them would give their victims many electric shock treatments, basically having people lose their minds.
This is where I have my effect, in the mind.
This is lysergic acid diethylamide, better known as acid. The powerful drug was first synthesized in 1938 in Switzerland. With a dose of mere micrograms, the mind becomes confused. Perception is distorted. Personal identity is called into question. The results can be euphoric bliss or deadly panic.
So that was how LSD was introduced to this country.
Operation Midnight Climax is part of a larger top secret CIA program called MKUltra. The goal, learn how to control and even reprogram people's minds. The CIA believes LSD might hold the key. Over the next 10 years, the agency doses a cross-section of the American public. Everyone from unwitting housewives, to soldiers, to even criminals like gangster Whitey Bulger is tested.
You know, what the CIA really dreamed of was sort of like a drug you could give to someone, get them to commit all sorts of unspeakable acts, and they wake up the next day and they don't remember what they've done.
They were looking into brainwashing. They were looking into mind control. They were looking into how they could create what they called Manchurian candidates. They were trying to figure out if they could get people to go out and do things that they would ordinarily not do, like assassination.
The case of MKUltra has to be one of the craziest cases of blowback in CIA history, because here they took this drug, LSD, and thought that they were going to be able to use it to control people's minds. And the unbelievable irony is that LSD is a drug that does exactly the opposite. It frees your mind and causes people to question authority.
Turn on, tune in, drop out.
The CIA's attempt to control people turned out to be just the opposite. It created the counterculture, as we know it, of the 60s. It was the CIA that introduced LSD to the United States.
So not only was the goal of this program brainwashing, but also reprogramming to get the victim to do anything the CIA wanted, even assassinations, and without the victim having the slightest memory of what he had done. The United States was concerned during the Korean War, where many American prisoners of war were confessing to the Koreans that they had actually used germ warfare on their country and were apologetic. Over 7,000 POWs petitioned the U.S. to end the war, and 21 of the soldiers even refused to return to the United States after the war. Well, Washington thought all of this was because of brainwashing techniques, which they thought had been used on the soldiers, but that was not the case. However, it did not prevent the U.S. from starting this aggressive and inhumane program to learn how to control humans by brainwashing them. Officially, the MKUltra program ended when information started seeping out after Olson's case was finally looked into. You know, he was the guy I introduced to you at the beginning of the program, the scientist who was set up to look like he committed suicide, but was most likely killed by the same CIA that he had worked for. It seemed that after he was given an LSD dosage, that he had a bit of a conscience and couldn't take the torture to others any longer. And Gottlieb and others, even higher up, knew that he needed to be silenced before he exposed what they were doing. Much about this program came to light 20 years after Olson's death, and because of the public exposure, the program was officially ended. However, there are those who say it never really ended, but just took on other forms. Let's get my guests involved in this discussion.
James Martinez is a media ecologist, radio talk show host, and pioneer in radio broadcasting and behavior modification. Born in San Diego, California, he's an accredited member of the Press for American Media Distribution. Martinez has been a consultant for True TV's Conspiracy Theory and has consulted for Emmy Award-winning actor Ian Bailey for a show entitled Imagine This.
Well, thank you so much, James, for being with us. I'd like to start off with this. How would you describe MKUltra to our audience?
MKUltra was brought over from Europe during World War II, where they were perfecting behavior modification using child abuse and satanic cult ritual. Those were the melting pots for what was to be used. Originally, most people think MKUltra had to do with being able to utilize behavioral software to override the conscious mind of an individual that was pre-programmed for instance, assassination. But it wasn't only for assassination. It was used for political purposes as well. And it was done through ritualistic abuse originally. That's how it started. these ritual abusive techniques were used to create deep-seated trauma within the psyche, and then around the trauma, build and program personalities for certain functions to be used. MKUltra, originally, what people know it from is being able to take the free will of an individual, any individual, and get them to commit murder without them knowing it or even remembering it, and carrying it out skillfully and discreetly so that it can be utilized for political purposes, for altering the chessboard pieces on the grand chessboard, so to speak. That's what it was for originally, but it has far more profound effects today.
I mean, that's really mind-boggling what you said. How successful would you say that program was?
Very successful, very successful. In 1990, when I was working with Walter Boert, we had and interviewed hundreds of people that survived ritualistic satanic abuse. Some were in the private sector, some were in the military, and some were utilized in Vietnam for assassination. And Walter Boert originally, what inspired him to write the book was discovery of deep-seated amnesia with a lot of the soldiers that came back from Vietnam. And he was always very sensitive to the whole idea of warfare as a whole. But what he really, really was concerned about was the battle over the mind. And we knew in 1990 that that's where the high ground was and the end of the road. And we've reached that now. We knew in 1990 that free will, freedom of speech, and cognitive liberty would be the biggest issues on the planet. And this today is where we're at, because we are now in the process of merging our central nervous system to technology. And this is, we're in a very, very dangerous place for the whole human race at this point.
Well, besides the drugs used in the MK Ultra program, I saw in an earlier interview that you had done, you talked about child abuse techniques also used. Can you expand on that for me?
When you have individuals in society that get off on having power over others as a mechanism of an effect of satisfaction to the psyche, most of the time it's because they're disassociated from previous childhood that they experienced as a youngster. Whether it was sanctioned by the government or done through a program, these type of individuals come into power, and then what ends up happening is they have no empathy or even feeling for anything outside of themselves, because they've been fractured themselves. And everybody has heard the term, you know, those that have been abused, abuse. And this is what we have today. And it was weaponized, MK Ultra, and all the programs associated with it, MK Naomi and all the others, were utilized against the public to capture America and then the world.
Well, you just mentioned about mind control techniques transcending. And you've also said about the role technology plays in all of this, technology and media. Let's talk about this a little bit. What do you mean exactly?
Marshall McLuhan wrote Understanding Media. He spoke before the Bilderbergs and the most powerful people in the world on the effects of technology on human perception. And this is a very important piece of the puzzle in understanding mind control, is being understand the what's known today as media ecology, which is the study of human perception and its marriage to technology. And we knew in the early 90s, when they began to outer the inner, that's it's called, of the central nervous system outside of the body via the computer, the media extension of our central nervous system, our handheld computers, that was the beginning of the end. And human perception would be altered forever because of that, all of which was planned by DARPA and the military industrial complex quite some time ago. So if people are trying to understand how this functions, they really need to study the works of Marsha McLuhan and other media theorists in the communications field, so they understand how human perception is altered through media environments, such as the television, the book, the computer, any media extension of the human psyche alters it. And they're aware of that. All the intelligence agencies were all told this in the 50s. They figured it all out, and they slowly utilized technology to alter and steer obsolescence and human perception and attention span, because now we're in an attention economy. And that's been offset by the amplification of our central nervous system to put us into an anticipation state all the time of receiving a text, receiving a message, receiving. And this is ADHD is an effect of the post-information environment and the computer, which we spoke about in Operation Mind Control.
I mean, if what you're saying is true in your perspective, what can be done to counter these measures?
It's incredibly damaging. I have kind of stayed away from a lot of the news, as I did a media fast by design, to unplug myself from everything. And that's what you need to do to have contrast and being able to survive in a post-information environment where everything now is inverted, information's moving at the speed of light, everything changes every second, human perception is being engineered and designed, and we've got the birth of the cybernetic being now, which is completely, totally different than what was previously there 5-10 years ago. We have different humans now. The days of the organic biological entity that we call a human being, it's gone. It's been re-engineered. Now it's being done genetically. So mind control now is not just taking over the mind, it's taking over the entire biology of an individual and re-engineering it for either extermination or for some policy to support the state. So the most important not discussed issue of our time right now is the liberation of the human condition and what it is to be human, because a lot of us don't know anymore, because we've been so damaged by the technology that's been inserted into the public. I mean, you've spoken to enough people and watched culture close enough yourself to see that what's been done to our children just by the interfacing of technology in their development years. What, you know, a lot of children grew up with a cell phone in their hand. That's a completely different reality and a different nervous system. Their nervous systems have been retuned for something else. They've been retuned to blend in so that their memories and personality will be on the cloud in the future. So the big discussion is, and should be all over the world, is where are we going, what are we doing, and why are we doing it based upon a few people's idea of what a human being should be?
It's really amazing what you're saying. Do you have any final thoughts?
Freedom of your mind and the liberation of the human condition, this is the high ground of the military-industrial complex and the New World Order. And if you do not, and people do not, address these issues, now you're not going to have free will. You're not going to have freedom. You're not going to have a right to rule and create a future that you want. This is, a lot of people have sacrificed to bring this information to the public a long time ago, and people have really put themselves out there because they know at this moment in our history, this is the crossroads of either the beginning and liberation of the human condition or the complete and total slavery of it. So I would suggest everybody start to examine it and take a real close look at it and start taking action from themselves. Don't expect any elected employee to do anything, because they've failed miserably, totally, completely. Specifically, I'm talking about the United States. Take it upon the individual self to take control of their own reality, take full responsibility, and then move ahead. That's what I suggest. That's my leaving party message for everybody.
Well, thank you very much, James Martinez, for a very interesting discussion. Well, listening to Mr. Martinez can only make us wonder how controlled all of our minds are right now. We're also connected to our screens. Is this the new form of brainwashing? Well, the original sin of torturing people and destroying thousands of lives was really never addressed. There were some families who were compensated, but the majority were not. And of course, the victims can never, ever be fully compensated. Now, this brings up the question that although the CIA says its MKUltra program no longer exists, what would stop it from using other inhumane techniques to reach a goal? It used biological warfare in the past and never really had to pay for it. What does that mean for us today? Are they in the business of creating germ warfare? It was said that the MKUltra program was so extensive that it even developed biological weapons in the form of aerosol sprays, and that all types of poisons and drugs were created, combined, and tested on humans. And that was then, in the 1950s and 60s. What about now?
March 16th, 2018. The U.S. government's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, commonly known as DARPA, announces a bold initiative to develop what they call next-generation non-surgical neurotechnology. It is designed to allow the human brain to directly interface with machines.
We know that DARPA is exploring human-machine interfaces that include direct connections between the brain and outside systems. That's been from the beginning of DARPA's information technology mission, and it continues to this day. DARPA has created some of the most influential technologies of all time, things that we use and take for granted every day, including the project that became the internet. They've created self-driving cars, stealth technology, GPS that fits in your pocket. That's DARPA's specialty, to imagine the future and create it.
A new technology that is actually very much on the verge of being a reality that is being fielded is we could have a sensor maybe on the surface of our head, or maybe implanted somewhere in our body, in our brain or something, that allows us to interact directly with our communications gear, our processing gear, our weapon systems, and so on. But now imagine we take that technology and we can control robots at a distance with it. Even fly drones, you put this sensor on and you think the right way and you can increase the speed of the fan by thinking and controlling that thought with direct-to-mind or mind-machine interfacing. With that type of capability, you could control all sorts of buttons and mechanisms in equipment.
Mind-machine interfaces will have many applications in both civilian and military life. But there are those who believe that this same technology could also be used by DARPA as a new form of mind control. Like their counterparts at the CIA, DARPA-funded researchers have spent decades investigating how the human mind can be altered. In 1965, DARPA launched Project Pandora, which studied the possibility of using microwave radiation to control human behavior. The project reportedly ended in 1969, but DARPA's investigation of how machines can affect and possibly control the brain continues to this day.
750,000 dollars. That's how much the Olson family was compensated for the assassination of Frank Olson by the CIA back in 1975, which is ironic because it seems the only murder that was compensated and apologized for in this manner was the murder of a scientist who himself was guilty of creating bioweapons responsible for the murder of many others. Well, in Canada alone, of the 300 victims who filed for compensation, 250 were turned down with the excuse of not having been affected badly enough, or for filing too late, or for the lack of medical records. which the CIA had conveniently destroyed. But these victims are only a fraction of those who were severely injured and killed by the similar scientific experiments on human beings without their knowledge and consent. Because in addition to these human guinea pigs and the